family is like a cerebral car, soft and smooth on the surface, but underneath nothing but maggot-infested rotting flesh.
I don't see any men here. I can only see a poor excuse for a man who thinks he's Robert Redford.
I'm warning you, I'm going to get angry.
You are just like a worm, crying and squirming in front of the crucifix, pathetic monsters!
Hi, this is Laurie Lafine, and we're on Hysteria Continues.
And indeed we are. So welcome back to Hysteria Continues, episode 91. And this time we're off to a very strange country. That country is Belgium, to meet some rabid grannies, which is interesting and maybe controversial pick by Nathan. Also, Nathan, do we have a talking point this week?
Well, I mean, I do have some discussion, but I mean, I didn't do a lot of research on it. Since this was my pick, I was doing all kinds of crazy research on the movie.
Okay. Well, let's see how things go. But,
to introduce, I miss Laurie.
Yeah. Well, Laurie's disappeared off Facebook, isn't she?
Yeah, she has.
Yeah. Yes. So, but anyway, we're going to be coming on to Rabid Grannies later, and as always, not literally, but introduce you to the gang. So, Eric, how have you been?
If looking good was a crime, I'd be on death row.
Well, of course, Eric, that's good to hear. But I hear, because obviously Nathan and Joseph are working on a film, but I understand you're doing a film as well. What's that about?
What's the word I'm looking for? Anal?
What, you're doing an anal film?
It's true.
Really? Can you tell us more about it?
It'll be the next installment in the Anal Paprika series, I reckon.
Gosh, because I know you kept it secret before, because you were doing that anal film before, but you couldn't do it. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you couldn't do it before?
Those goddamn enchiladas!
Oh, Eric. But I thought anal was illegal in Ireland. Have you got into any trouble?
Oh, the police were here, Daddy.
So, as you may have guessed, Eric isn't with us today. Unfortunately, he's been taken away. He's been off to a Turkish prison. But he has sent in his thoughts on Rabid Grannies. And also, we have a joke of the week coming up with a brand new Eric jingle. So we're very much hoping that Eric will be breaking out in time for our Christmas episode. So that's to come, as it were. But Joseph, how are you doing? And you are really here, aren't you?
I really am here, and for one day only, I'm going to pretend I like Toya.
Right, okay, well, I know that will take a lot of strength. So,
yes.
It's admiration.
Susie is a poo-poo head, Justin.
Oh, you can't become Eric for the day. You're channeling Eric. Do
yeah,
your Irish accent.
Yeah, let me see if I can do my Irish accent.
Okay.
Never mind, I can't do it. It's too early.
Okay.
Do you really think that Eric's comebacks are that lame, Joseph?
Yeah.
Susie's a poo-poo head. Is that something Eric would say?
It probably is.
That
actually
is something Eric would say.
It is probably something Eric would say. But, Nathan, how are you doing? This is your pick, isn't it?
Yes, it is my choice. And I know it's very controversial, but all I have to say is we covered Predator. Okay. So, I mean, if we covered that, then we can cover this.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll see what we'll do when we get to it. We'll play Eric's thoughts first, so we don't, because I haven't listened to it yet, but he sent a 5-minute thought in, so it should be interesting. But again, this might be a little bit shorter episode, because obviously Eric takes up a lot of room. talking, I mean. But,
was that a fat joke?
No, that was not a fat joke. It's Eric's always, he's a big contribution. Yes. To the show, and he is missed, but yes, he will be back. But what have we been watching? So, Nathan, do you want to tell us what you've watched recently?
Well, I haven't really watched much, because even though this is going out 2 weeks after our last show, you know, it's only really been a week. So I haven't really had time to watch much. I did rewatch ATM, and this movie is growing on me a lot. I think I'm really liking it now. Which I actually hated it the first time I watched it, but I don't know. I'm just really, really liking it a lot this time around.
Okay. And why is that? I think we've all watched it. I've watched it, and I know, Joseph, you've watched it, haven't you?
Yes.
I don't know what it is. I just keep seeing, like, I guess some camera work and some things the director did that I'm like, oh, I really like the way he did that. You know, I mean, it's not a perfect movie by any means. The characters can drive you crazy at times, but I mean, that happens in a lot of movies.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I can't remember too much about it, but I mean, it's, I think it's going to be, it was criticized as being having not very likable characters and being a bit silly, but then it's a slasher movie, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't dislike the characters. I just thought they made some really, really poor decisions.
No. Well, okay. Well, that's good. Anything else?
No, that was about it. Horror related.
Okay. Right. What about you, Joseph?
Well, I'm kind of interested in watching ATM again because, yeah, I thought it was a very stylish film, but you know, I could not get past what some of the things the characters do. But everyone keeps saying it grows on you, so maybe I should give it another chance.
Yeah. Well, no. I think sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as watching anything, you know, like Nathan, it's only been a week since we last recorded, so I haven't really watched much. I did rewatch out of boredom. I don't know why. I rewatched Scream 4. On Netflix because they have all four films on there, and for some reason I was like, well, you know, maybe this is another one where my opinion will change, and it really hasn't. I mean, there's a few touches in this film I like, but I don't know. I still feel like it was like they missed the ferry by about 3 or 4 years. It's just too little, too late.
What are your thoughts on the Scream TV series?
Well, I'm kind of interested in that, except I'm hearing that, you know, they're not going to use the ghost mask, which is kind of, you know, iconic with the Scream series. I think due to rights issues with whoever released the mask, I believe it was Fun Factory or someone like that. So it won't really be the same if they don't use the mask. Now, what I'm hearing is that they're using some sort of variation on the mask. Which I guess, you know, is not a huge, you know, not a huge big deal, but I kind of would like to see that mask again. But I think it's supposed to be like a, you know, a 10 or 13 episode mystery series, kind of like Harper's Island, you know, a murder every episode. So, and, you know, the killer revealed at the very end of the season. So I'm definitely, you know, interested in it. And, you know, a lot of cable networks are getting away with a lot, you know, in this day and age with, you know, with violence and nudity and, you know, swearing. So even though it's on MTV, maybe it'll be something worth watching.
Okay. What about you, Nathan?
I'm interested in the TV series. I'm curious to see where they go with it. As far as Scream 4 goes, I'm a fan. I mean, I liked it. I don't think it's as good as the others, but I still really enjoyed it. I think my biggest problem, and spoiler alert, if anybody out there hasn't seen it, please skip ahead a few minutes and don't get mad at me for spoiling it. What really bugs me is that, you know, Emma Roberts weighs about 100 pounds, and for some reason she's able to beat up everybody in this movie. Like nobody, not one person can, like, beat her up. Not one person could, like, you know, restrain her in any way. And I'm like, okay, what is going on here? I don't understand how she's able to beat everybody up so easily. Like, it's effortless for her, you know.
Yes.
That being said, I actually really like Emma Roberts, and she's getting a lot of hate on American Horror Story, and I don't understand why, because I like her a lot.
Cool. Okay. All right. Thank you, Joseph. Anything else?
No, that's about it.
Okay. Well, I've watched a few things. I watched on Netflix as well, but I watched a couple of things. One of them was the Patrick remake. Have either of you guys seen that?
No, I really want to. I've heard some good things.
It's all right. It's got Sharni Vinson, who was in You're Next, and a few other bits and pieces, Australian actress, and also Rachel Griffiths, quite sort of recognisable Australian actress. And I think Charles Dance plays the Doctor in it. It's not. I didn't like it. I don't think it was nearly as good as the original. It was a bit. It's kind of a weird mixture of kind of stylized gothic. It's kind of basically follows the same kind of formula, except it's set in this kind of hospital for people with brain injuries. But it's kind of like the Addams Family Mansion. So it's kind of weird gothic look to it, and everything is all kind of rainy and dark all the time, which is kind of quite atypical for what you think of Australia. But obviously, they do get weather like that there. But it's very stylized. They kind of the hospital, it's all the walls look like they're covered in soot, and all the nurses are wearing what look like old-fashioned uniforms. So I don't have a problem with it being stylized, but it didn't really ring true. It wasn't. I thought the original, although I haven't seen it for quite a few years, was quite creepy. This, I don't know. It was all right. It's a passable time waster, but it's not great. I didn't think it was great. Yeah. I mean, it's got one good scene, a number of entertaining scenes, but there's the scene, the now infamous scene where all the people with brain damage sit up and say Patrick wants his hand job. Which I thought was quite entertaining, but it's all right. Yeah, it's
now, worth a watch. It is on Netflix, so I may check it out.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. The other thing I finally caught up with again on Netflix was Hatchet 3,
which
I hadn't seen before, but I really enjoyed it actually. I mean, it's quite a short film. I think it only clocks in about 78 minutes or something, but I enjoyed it a lot more than Hatchet 2. I thought it was a much more better rounded, fun film, and it's got Daniel Harris back, and also is it Carolyn?
Carolyn Williams.
Yes, from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and also is it Zach? No, who's in Gremlins?
Zach Galligan.
Zach Galligan. Yeah, he's in it as well. A few recognizable faces. It's also obviously got the two. I think it's Thingy Mears, Jason Mears. I should have done this my research. He played Jason in the remake.
Derek Mears,
and also, God, my brain is not working today. But who played Jason in all the films?
Kane Hodder.
It's like a quiz, isn't it, with an Alzheimer's patient. So asking
I feel
questions.
That, yeah, we're having a quiz here.
But yeah, they're all in it, and it's very gory. It's exactly what you expect, but it's got some fun little cameos in, which I won't spoil. And I just thought it was a fun 80 minutes. So you two guys seen it?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you enjoy?
No, I've seen the first two, which I remember, and I seem to remember watching 3, but I really don't remember anything, so I don't actually remember if I watched it, but it seems like I did.
Mm-hmm. I liked part 3. I don't think it's as good as part 1, but it is better than 2. Mm. And that's kind of where it falls for me. It's not one that I'd probably watch again. Really, out of the Hatchet series, the only one I find rewatchable is part 1. Mm. Like, I could rewatch it over and over, because... You know, and I know that a lot of people give Hatchet Part 1 flack for, you know, kind of being advertised as old school horror, when really it's not. You know, it's not old school, because there's a lot of comedy in it. But I think it's really entertaining and fun, so I love watching it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I mean, I it was a pleasant surprise, because I remember Hatchet 2 was quite annoying, and I thought I didn't like Daniel Harris very much in Part 2, but I thought she was pretty good in this. And Caroline Williams kind of added a nice. Her character was fun in this. So it was a perfect time waster, basically. So there was that.
I was only going to ask you. I was curious about Patrick too. How was Rachel Griffiths in it? Because I love her, and she's one of my favorite actresses.
She's all right. I mean, there isn't, none of the acting is particularly fantastic in it. She plays a really, really grumpy, dour nurse who's very kind of just, you know, which works in the character that she is, but she's not, there's no humour to her at all. She's very kind of just dour and prim in it.
Oh, okay. All right.
But it's okay. It's worth a watch. It's just not, I seem to remember the original Patrick being quite spooky. And this wasn't spooky at all, really. It was just silly.
The original Patrick had that one scene where someone's standing in a doorway, and then in the blink of an eye, they're like right in front of they're right up on the lens. And it shocked, you know, scared me when I was younger. Mm. I always remember that from the original Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, watch it and see, because like you say, it's on Netflix, so watch it and see what you think. The other film I saw, which hasn't been released yet, well, a documentary, is a long in gestation new documentary from High Rising Productions. And I sent a screener online screener for 42nd Street Memories, which is a documentary about 42nd Street in New York, and obviously all the grindhouse cinemas there. So it's got like basically everyone who was involved in making films around the area that was shown in, not everyone, but a lot of the people, like sort of Bill Lustig, Joe Dante, Graydon Clark, people like that. A lot of people who are making kind of slasher horror type movies that would be playing on in grindhouses on 42nd Street. And there's Debbie Rochon. I think it's Veronica Hart, who's the porno actress from the 70s, is interviewed as well, talking about her time. And there's just lots of stories about how scary and dirty and thrilling going to a grindhouse cinema was back in the day in New York, with all sorts of tales of people urinating and worse in the theatre, and being mugged in toilets and not eating popcorn because there's rat feces in it and all sorts of things like that. But what made up for it were the films. That's going to be coming out soon. I'm not quite sure when, but that's definitely one. If you've got any kind of interest in 70s grindhouse or, you know, 80s grindhouse, then it's a fantastic documentary. We've got interviews from loads and loads of people from that time. So that's a definite recommend when it does come out. And I can obviously let you know when that's going to be. And just out of following on from that, it looks like the people from 88 Films have raised about 3/4 of the money they need to do the restoration on Zombie Holocaust. So it looks like that will be happening. They've still got 22 days left and they've made 75%. So I'm pretty sure that's going to happen now, which is really good news. So,
oh yeah, that's a definite.
Yeah. So that's excellent. If they get any more money, they're going to put it towards. They're also releasing Burial Ground on Blu-ray, I think, or maybe it's just on DVD, and some Italian Jelly as well. So yeah, great label, and definitely worth supporting their efforts to get better prints and more extras on there. So all good. So
apparently, 88 Films is also releasing. They're also releasing a copy of Don't Go in the Woods.
Yes. No, that's right. Yeah.
Are they linked to Vinegar Syndrome in some way?
No, because they also did the Graduation Day, so yeah. It's like maybe they're like nipping at each other's heels.
I've got a feeling they use they either licensed. I'm not sure what the deal is, but I think they do use the same print as they use on the American release of Graduation Day, 88 Films. So I think there may be some licensing thing going on with that. But yeah, they're doing Don't Go Into the Woods. They put out on Unhinged and obviously Graduation Day and various others. So yeah, it's a great little label, as is Vinegar Syndrome.
So, oh yes.
We had some news, didn't we, about what we're going to be doing with Vinegar Syndrome in the next, coming months?
Yeah, I can announce that they've given permission. So basically, obviously, we're doing the Madman Blu-ray commentary, the Don't Go in the Woods Blu-ray commentary, and later in the year, Frightmare, also known as the Horror Store. So those should be interesting.
Yeah, they'd be good fun ones to do. We were offered some others, weren't we? But we didn't really think they were right fit for us, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, we don't really get great reviews, I guess, on our non-slasher commentaries.
No,
I was reading some reviews about our commentaries, and people had some interesting stuff to say.
Yeah, I think it's very.
I can't say that they are working on other slasher releases, but we can't really talk about those right now. But hopefully, we'll be offered those as well.
Yeah, and just in case you're missing Eric,
you whore.
So, just threw that in there just so we can remind ourselves.
Is he calling a whore?
Sorry. Well, just probably anyone, but it's usually me, isn't it?
Yeah, so, usually it's you.
Yeah, or what's we can ask him. We'll see if we can divine. What's Nathan, Eric?
You whore!
Well, there you go.
Thank you, Eric.
Did we want to have a little discussion, a little talking point before we got to the main feature, or do you want to say later?
I'm fine with having a little talking point. I mean, this episode's going to be short anyway, as it is. So, something I've been curious about. Oh, this look, is... Eric just sent you us a whore. Message.
Sorry?
Eric just sent us a message.
Did he?
Oh, he's making my phone buzz on purpose.
Is he? Is that what he said? He's like, isn't Patrick.
Isn't he supposed Patrick, to be at work?
I'm like, shouldn't you be working? All right. My talking point is on, you know, heroines. Because, you know, we did, a long time ago, our top three heroines. But we picked, you know, like Jamie Lee Curtis and Amy Steele and, you know, like well-known ones. So my, you know, what I'm curious about is who are some of your favorites that are not like, you know, the ones well-known from like Halloween or Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw. I'm like some of the ones that may not get as much love.
Interesting thing. It's a curse of Eric, isn't it?
Yes, Eric's like messaging us while we're doing the show, everybody, just so y'all know.
Eric just called me a knob goblin.
He just called me a knob goblin. Well, Eric, just wait until you listen back to this episode. Yes. right, okay, well, favourite heroines from lesser-known slasher movies. I'm trying to think who would be... Nathan, do you want to go first? I'm sure you thought about this.
I mean, one of mine is Valerie from Slumber Party Massacre, but I did pick her for my top three, so I'm not going to, you know, go into that, you know, over again.
Yeah.
I quite like the heroine in Rabid Grannies, but I'll talk about her in a little bit. But some of the other ones that, you know, I really like is, oh my goodness, I got, Eric's throwing me off here. Eric.
We'll see.
I want Justin. You need to say "Oh, Eric" to him.
Oh, Eric. What's he doing now?
He keeps messaging us on Facebook.
Even when he's not on the show.
Just so people know, you know, when I'm on my phone, when I'm doing the show, like right now, my setup is very cheap. I'm doing it on my iPhone. So when Eric messages, I can see what he's saying every time. So that's what makes it a little crazy. But anyway, where else I was going with it was I really liked, what's her name? I should have prepared better for this. I didn't quite expect to do it this time around. But there's the heroine in The Last Slumber Party, and I know that Justin really likes her. Am I right, Justin?
Oh, yeah. Well, she's a classic, isn't she?
Clack, 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 clack.
Oh, Lord. I love the heroine from Stage Fright. You know, I thought that she did pretty well in her battle against the killer, although I disagree with her decision to go back to look for a watch. I did disagree with that.
Well, what about you, Joseph?
Well, you know, I like Linda Blair in Hell Night for two reasons.
Oh, if I can imagine what those two reasons are.
Yeah. No, I actually also like, I think one of the obvious choices would be Deborah Benson's character in Just Before Dawn.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for, you know, for the finale alone.
Oh yeah, I mean she's a really good choice.
Yeah, I mean I'm kind of you know, this is kind of, you know, happened like at the very last second, so I'm kind of struggling to think this early in the morning, but I kind of like what's her name? I don't know if you'd really call her a heroine. The girl from Dressed to Kill?
I would say so. Nancy Allen's character. Nancy Allen.
Yeah. I kind of guess so. Yeah.
Well, it's not that she's, you know, it's not that she's like strong willed or anything. She's more because she has to be saved by Keith Gordon, but she's more, you know, peppy and, you know, sarcastic. And I kind of like her character. So she's one.
Okay.
Do you guys consider Gail Weathers a heroine?
It's difficult to say, really, isn't it? She kind of is towards the... not so much in the first film, is she?
Well, she does manage to help out a lot in the first, but she's more... especially in the second film with her coming in to kind of throw everyone off. And I mean, she survived four films, so I guess, yes, she would be.
I mean, for me, though, a few that jump to mind, and we may have discussed these before, would be Catherine McNeil, I think, in House on Sorority Row.
Oh yeah,
she's really good. Who else did I liked the, you know, the characters in the Laurie Lathine and the other woman whose name escapes me in The Prey. They're more likable than and also Laurie Lathine in Bloody Birthday. She's very likable, isn't she? Which is a likable actress, isn't she? So that kind of helps, because there's certain films where you have kind of unlikable, not, you know, all charismatic free kind of final girls, like a film like Eyes of a Stranger. She's pretty charismatic free. Rebecca Balding in Silent Scream's good as well, isn't she?
Yeah, I like her. I like the actress anyway.
Mm. I think an interesting kind of unusual pick would be Jennifer Jason Leigh in Eyes of a Stranger. Because, you know, she pretty much, you know, what she has to go through while being blind. So, you know, she's a pretty, you know, formidable, you know, final girl considering she's blind.
Yeah, no.
What do you guys think of Barbie Benton in X-Ray?
Oh, God.
You don't like her?
She's quite likable. I mean, it's just not a very believable role, is it?
Oh, well, I mean, I could see that. Oh, and Splatter University. I really like the heroine in that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she was very good, nice, wasn't she? And of course, they made the shocking decision to not have her live. Spoiler alert! Until the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't very believe true, you very spoiled true. That.
Sorry. Well, we've already done spoiler. Sorry, Splatter University. Spoiler University.
See, Spoiler University. See, my problem with a lot of these lesser-known films, I tend to find the secondary characters more interesting than the final girls. You know, case in point would be House of Death. I thought the final girl in that was bland. Mm. I wanted the slut character, Ramona, to be the final girl.
No, at least Ramona made it towards the end, though.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't have been as great if they'd killed her off early on. Mm. But I like Susie Kendall in Torso.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
she's good too.
In Bird and the Crystal Plumage as well, isn't she? Although she doesn't have as big a role in that.
Yeah. I just thought her character in Torso was a lot smarter.
Mm.
I love her, you know, like the killer doesn't know she's there, so she goes and hides everything in that room and makes it look like nobody's been there. And I thought that was smart.
Mm. I really like Olivia Hussey in Black Christmas as well, because she kind of acts how you would imagine somebody might in real life.
Oh yeah, how could I have left her out?
Yeah,
considering that's my favorite film.
Even though her character is not 100% nice,
no,
especially to Peter.
Mm. But it's I think the. Ever since you, Halloween, after Halloween, you started getting all the women fighting back, which I think is a positive, but it's also, it meant that you, in some ways, there's more of a uniform thing, wasn't it? When you started getting to like the Terminator and Linda Hamilton becoming these kind of Uber, and, you know, Nancy and Friday, A Nightmare on Elm Street, and most of the Friday 13th final girls, from Amy Steele onwards, it became, there was less of a vulnerability there. Whereas in something like Black Christmas, she still is smart and kind of, gets away. But there's still that vulnerability and that kind of slight, edgy character, like you say.
See, I would not call her mean. I mean, she's not mean-spirited. She's just flawed. So she's more realistic that way. You know, whereas someone like Laurie in the Halloween remake is just, you know, screaming and yelling and... Jess in the original Black Christmas, she's more human because, you know, that's pretty much how humans act. They don't yell and scream. They have feelings about, you know, things of that nature.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think she's like just outright mean. I just feel like the way she is the situation with Peter, I mean, it's just all the wrong way to do that from the beginning.
She went about the wrong way. She might be a little selfish. She might be a little selfish. One more I forgot was Barbara Capisti from Stage Fright.
I said her.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't paying attention.
Joseph.
Yeah.
Oh, Joseph. How very dare you?
This is my Irish accent.
Is it?
That's your Irish accent.
Yeah, Irish. I'm Irish.
You whore.
Awful.
So, See, that's an Irish accent for you.
I wish I could like figure out a way to kind of torment Eric while he's at work and get him fired.
You want to get Eric fired? That's nice.
It's not very nice. Talk about not being you know, nice characters. But I think maybe we should move swiftly on to our feature presentation. So, Nathan, are you going to bring us back in after this trailer?
I will bring you back in.
Okay. Well, here is the trailer for 1988. I think it's Rabid Grannies.
Grandma, what big eyes you have. Grandma, what big teeth you have. Grandma, what a big mouth you have. Oh, goody, goody. We're taking a trip to Granny's house. She and her sister are having a birthday party. Isn't that nice?
Perhaps it is time to open up our presents.
But be careful, because someone has sent these two sweet old ladies a very nasty present. Now, these granny gone berserk. So you better not eat your chicken soup.
At least they're enjoying themselves this year.
Rabid grannies.
They don't exist.
They're not just grannies, they're party animals, ready to get down. Get funky, get wasted. Rabid grannies. Grannies serving up something special for dinner. You. Rabid grannies from Troma.
Oh, you could totally tell that was a Troma trailer for sure. Rabid Grannies, another one of my favorite films. It's about these two really sweet elderly women who are inviting their families to their castle for, you know, their birthday party. And the families, they don't really like the grandmothers. All they care about is how rich they are, and they want their money. So that's the only reason they're showing up. Well, once they get there, there's a stranger at the gate who brings them a gift from their disinherited nephew who has become a Satanist, and that's why he was disinherited. So needless to say, the gift ends up turning them into demons. They're not really rabid. There's no rabies, so I don't really know where that came from, but they proceed to butcher their family over the course of the night, and that's totally my kind of movie. I've always been a huge fan of this movie. You know, I know that a lot of people, they say, okay, well, it takes forever to get going. You know, the first 30 minutes are dull, but I actually enjoy the interaction with this ridiculous family. I mean, the scenes where they're trying to one-up each other at the dinner table, I think that's great. You know, the Harvey who works in his company, and Helen brings that up as in he kills so many innocent people and then he has to be on his toes to find a way to defend himself. You know, so he can stay on the grandmother's good side. And then you have the grandmothers talking about how they love the family. And one of the characters, Bertha, like way overdoes her, you know, response to that. I mean, I think one of the characters even tells her to stop overdoing it. So, I mean, the whole thing is nobody in this family is likable. I mean, nobody within the family. I mean, maybe the little kids, maybe. But the adults are all just horrible, horrible people. The only ones that I could say I actually did like is I obviously liked the lesbian or the bisexual, I guess, final girl, because she doesn't really know the grandmothers. So, I mean, you know, she's, I guess, lesser of the evils in that house. You know, and I love that they – push a chest against the door and say, oh, they won't get in here. That thing weighs a ton. But then every time they move it after that, it's just like a barely push and they can just move it out of the way. So like, that's a little bit of a goof. And, you know, about the heroine, I actually thought it was interesting to have a bisexual prostitute as the heroine because, I mean, she even has sex in the movie. I mean, she does all the things you shouldn't do and she still survives. I guess she didn't do drugs at least. I really like the scene with the grannies and the priest where, you know, it's like they're telling him, okay, well, we're either going to kill you and it's going to be very painful, but you'll go to heaven, or you can kill yourself painlessly, but you'll go to hell. Mm. And, you know, he has to make his decision. Okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You know, and the priest has been shown to be a complete coward throughout the whole film. Some of the humor in the movie doesn't really work for me. I think that that's one thing I definitely have something I'd change about it is, you know, like at the dinner table scene when the grandmother rips into that woman's face, Erica, that's her name, rips into Erica's face. The kid is like, oh, that's smashing. And I'm like, I don't think any kid's going to have that reaction to seeing something like that right in front of them. I think the priest's reaction of looking at it and saying, holy shit, is more appropriate. Let's see. Well, I got some more talking points, but I kind of want to save them because I don't know what Eric has said, and I don't really want to repeat, you know, anything that Eric might have said. So I think I'm going to hold off on these until we hear what Eric's opinion is.
You whore!
Okay. Oh, well, thank you.
This is our missive from Eric. Here we go.
Nathan Jeremiah Johnson. How on earth is Rabid Grannies a slasher movie? You do realize that The Hysteria Continues is a, quote, slasher movie podcast. So why are we covering a film about demonically possessed old ladies? If we're covering Rabid Grannies, then we might as well be covering The Evil Dead. We might as well be covering Xanadu. We might as well be covering my favourite film of all time, Dirty Dancing. And actually, I'm kind of glad you chose Rabid Grannies now, because I do want to cover Dirty Dancing. So get ready to research that one in the new year of 2015, guys. But seriously, Nathan, I think you need to take a good, long, hard... A good long hard think about what constitutes a slasher movie for your future picks, okay? Although, having said that, please don't pick Terror at 10 Killer. Anyway, onto the movie. Rabid Grannies I first saw in probably around 1990 or 1991 in what I assume was a heavily censored VHS version. My first impressions were not good. In fact, I thought the film was incredibly dull from what I remember. So this is my first time viewing it in nearly a quarter of a century. And this time I actually thought it was quite good. It's flawed for sure, but I found it fairly watchable. Now, normally I would absolutely love this type of movie. I love 1980s trashy European gore movies. I'm a big fan of Lamberto Bava's Demons and Demons 2. And this is kind of like a Belgian riff, Ashin possibly, if you like, on you know, Demons and Demons 2. What's different, though, in this instance is that Demons and Demons 2 are not played for laughs, even though they're quite funny. The humour in those films is born out of its sort of mounting absurdities. Rabid Grannies, on the other hand, is trying to be deliberately funny, which often lessens the fun, certainly in my eyes. And I'd prefer it if they'd played it straight rather than that sort of goofy approach they take. I didn't think it was necessary. I thought the film's premise was silly enough and it just, you know, should have played it straight from then. Like even something like The Evil Dead, which has comedy in it, works really well as a horror film, whereas I don't think Rabid Grannies quite does. Also, Demons and, of course, The Evil Dead, which I just mentioned, those films, they build up a head of steam and they have a great energy to them. And I feel that's missing from Rabid Grannies. In between the gore scenes, it sags a little, you know, as it has scenes of unlikable bickering characters, which I find disrupts the momentum slightly. And even though the film is a scant, you know, 85 minutes or so long, it feels a bit longer, I think. There are some great scenes in it, though. The young girl's legs being chopped off, which is a brave move on the filmmaker's part, I thought. The demonic doppelganger of the young boy biting off his mother's fingers was quite fun. And I like the Electress who gets pinned to the iron gate by the Jeep. They're all like great scenes, quite silly, gory. The effects are
quite low rent, which is quite fun. I also love the scene where the rather rotund Fred gets stuck trying to escape through a narrow passageway. It's quite funny, and I had to laugh because I thought, God, it must be awful to be really fat and have a huge arse. And it's got lesbians in it. I mean, every trashy film from the 80s should have lesbians in it, in my opinion. And did anyone think that the so-called black sheep of the family was possibly someone we knew? I mean, he's described as someone who likes to hang around cemeteries with his friends and hold a black mass. Now, who does that sound like?
Toya.
Justin.
Oh, and incidentally, this is the second film I watched this week where a woman destroys a box with a crucifix, because I also watched The Exorcist earlier in the week. The film's tone reminds me a lot of Slaughter High. Now, if you remember Slaughter High filmed in the UK in Slough, or some, you know, not terribly glamorous suburb of London, and I was trying to pretend it was in the USA. And similarly, Rabbit Grannies is, it's hard to tell, it's hard to pinpoint where they're trying to set it. It's possibly England as well, but people are driving on the wrong side of the road, which is kind of a giveaway that it's not shot there. It was actually shot in Belgium. But I have to say, overall, it's a thumbs up from me. I would possibly give the film maybe a 6 out of 10. It's certainly not a must-see. I wouldn't be ridiculously anxious to watch it again in the near future, but it was kind of fun. So I'll leave you now with a blast of one of the world's most famous Rabbit Grannies. Take it away, Susie.
Well, as we can see, Essie can give as good as he gets, Connie. But mind you, most of Dublin knows that. Nathan, what did you think of Eric's views?
I wrote Eric on Facebook while we were listening, and I said, if Predator is a slasher, then so is Rabbit Grannies. And he says that Predator qualifies, but Rabbit Grannies does not. Now, I don't personally see how military guys fighting an alien is a slasher movie, but, you know, what do I know? I told him I'm glad he liked it anyway. Yeah. And I also told him, yes to Terror at 10 Killer. It will be chosen. No.
Okay.
I'm very sorry, but that's just the way it is.
I'll just in for me and Eric.
You whore!
Well, how dare you? And just for you doing that, I'm gonna ask Joseph what his opinion is.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's see. First of all, I never said Predator was a slasher film. I picked it because it shared a lot of similarities.
Oh, I thought Eric picked it.
No.
Oh, okay.
You're actually calling Rabbit Grannies a slasher film. I'm not. But that being said, I actually enjoyed Rabbit Grannies. It reminds me a lot, kind of a cross between, you know, Demons and Benny Hill. It has that kind of humor going on. And I think I like this film a lot more hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I had a weird little glitch there. But anyway.
We've got a few issues.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's one of those shows. I think Eric's maybe the glue that holds us together. The big bottle of glue. Anyway, as I was saying, I think I like. I mean, I did enjoy Rabbit Grannies. I think it's a lot of fun. I actually liked a lot of the humor. It's certainly gory and graphic, but I think I like the film, you know, a lot more from a technical standpoint than I do from a storytelling standpoint. I love the scene where they're kind of wading through the sewer, and then they get out into the Jeep and they have that big chase, and then the girl gets pinned on the Jeep and then into the gate. I think that is a terrific, you know, how they set that shot up is terrific. And just a lot of the cinematography in this film is just so good. They do, you know, they do the perfect dolly zoom on the little girl with the depth of perception, the background just fading, kind of zooming out, and then she goes into that kind of weird little room with all those little toys hanging from the ceiling. And I don't know, they really go some wild places with the camera in this film, like, you know, doing 360 degree turns, you know, jib mounts all the way up from the ceiling looking down on characters. It's just so wild. But, you know, as far as the actual story goes, I enjoyed it. I think, you know, once the grandmothers become quote unquote rabid, as it were, you know, like Nathan said, they don't have rabies, so I don't know where it came from. And I'm hearing myself repeat, so sorry if I get kind of jumbled, but we are definitely having some Skype issues here. I think once they turn, you know, rabid and they start picking everyone off, it's just, you know, a big gory bloodbath, and it's a lot of fun. I'd give the film maybe a 7 out of 10 because it's just, it never really stops. I mean, there's a lot of artistry to it. It's not boring. You know, the characters are despicable, but they're despicable in that way where you like to watch them, you know, bicker back and forth, and you certainly like to watch them die. So, you know, while technically I could see why Nathan picked this, because, you know, it does have a body count. So I'll allow that. I did have a lot of fun with it. So thumbs, you know, more than marginally up. I'd say thumbs way up.
Oh, great. Okay, well, that leaves us with Justin.
Okay, right. Well, I said this before quite a few times, but I saw Rabid Grannies back in 1990 at a film festival. And I don't remember much about it then, apart from I seem to remember a lot of people laughing at it. And I think it was with it more necessary than at it. So I remember it being quite the hit of the festival. But so I haven't seen it since. I don't think. I may have watched it a while back. I don't remember. But yeah, I like it. I think it's a fun film. It's probably not a love it or hate it film, but it's a film that a lot of people will hate because it's there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in it. There's a lot of gore, and surprisingly, in the uncut version, which I saw the Dutch version, which apparently is the only uncut version, because bizarrely, when Troma released it in the States, they cut a lot of the gore out, apparently, which seems a bit strange. I'm not really sure why they did that, but it's a kind of truly bizarre film, and I think it's kind of cartoonish, I kind of guess is probably the best way to describe it. None of the characters have any real depth to them, apart from maybe, you know, to a little bit is the lesbian prostitute, that she has a few different layers to her. But everyone else is a kind of caricature from the kind of the slimy, highly strung priest who's, you know, is very a bad religious person. But all of the others are playing a character, and they pretty much stick to that character throughout, which isn't a bad thing, because you've got so many characters in it. You have probably about 20, 25 people in it, so lots of death scenes, and let's say very, very gory. And I think Eric was saying, and probably yourselves have said, it's kind of, it takes its lead from films like The Evil Dead and Demons especially. But it's very atypical for a Belgian film. I mean, the only other Belgian horror film I can think of, not similar, but it's certainly with that, this kind of twisted humour, was Man Bites Dog, which was a kind of not in any way similar to this, apart from the kind of the dark sense of humour. But as I say, this is very much very cartoonish, and it also has that extra cartoonish sort of feel to it because of the dubbing, which you have characters dubbed in English voices, and some of them regional northern voices as well, which it's very obvious it's set in Belgium. You know, they go to those towns, everything looks like Antwerp, wherever it is, you know, places in Belgium. And hopefully people can hear this because it's very it's being very stuttery today.
we're getting a lot of clack 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 classic.
We are, yes, lots of those moments. But stuff I liked about it, I mean, I liked the gore. I thought the gore was pretty well accomplished for such a low-budget movie. Some of it was pretty funny. It was hit or miss with the humour. And also, I think, quite often with comedies, some of them don't age as well as others. And possibly that's the case here. And whether or not there was any kind of humour that a Belgian audience would find funnier, I don't know. But, you know, those kind of things, like I like the kind of the anti-religious angle to this, and the you know, when the grannies are going to say about cutting out those two holy orbs, talking about the priest balls, and you know, I really like the fact that you had like a lesbian final girl, basically, which was, although her lover I think was the first to die, wasn't she, at the beginning, so it was topped and tailed, as it were, by by lesbians. But you know, some great dialogue. I love, you know, the things when they, when the fat guy turns to the, you know, shouts, "Listen, lesbian, shut up." You know, all those kind of, it just kind of, yeah, it is what it is. It's probably a love it or loathe it type film. Whether or not it's a slasher movie, you know, it's a lot of people being gathered in a remote house and being killed off one by one by a pair of killers. So if from that point of view, then it's, well, yes, it is, you know, it's, and, but yeah, I can see why people wouldn't think it's a slasher movie. It has the trappings of the slasher movie. You know, there's not much in the way of stalking in it. It's mostly, you know, most people running away, a few jokes, and then bodily dismemberment every 10, 15 minutes. So if that's your kind of thing, then you'd get a kick out of it.
So, I agree. Mm. And, you know, I think with the whole lesbian thing, like, I know that, like, her lover, the lesbian, gets killed at the beginning, but I don't think she really cared that much. I mean, she didn't seem to act like it bothered her that badly, but I got the feeling, though, that she was just a prostitute for that woman, you know, whereas I didn't get any, like, sense of, like, they cared about each other too much, you know, I mean, it seemed more like she just, you know, wanted her, I guess, for sex only.
Now, Justin, did you watch the version with the Dutch subs?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's the one I watched as well. It is. It's quite graphic compared to the trauma release.
Mm. Can you send that to me?
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't get to. I watched the gore scenes, but on the DVD I have, the gore scenes are actually like a bonus feature. It's not. They're not in the film, which is very annoying.
I don't really understand why Troma did that. Because, you know,
I don't get it either. I'm like, this movie, I mean, most people would want to watch it for the gore. So you're cutting out the main thing people would want to see it for.
Well, the gore itself is so comical and, you know, like Justin said, almost cartoony. It's like, why would you cut that? It's not like it's, you know, it's not really mean spirited or anything in that nature.
Yeah, no, very
odd. I quite loved when the grandma, like the family was being so annoying, chanting, "Bring a knife for the cake," and the grandmother jumped up and just sliced the whole cake open with her fingernail. Because this, I mean, really, this is probably one of the worst, like, families, I guess, in a slasher movie, because, I mean, they're all, I mean, it's funny because none of them really have moments where they seem anything other than, like Justin said, a caricature. Like, even when danger arrives, they're still being mean and bickering with each other.
Well, because they're all painted as they're only there, aren't they, to kind of covet sort of goodwill with the grannies. Or they're not even their grannies, are they? They're aunts, aren't they?
Yeah, and they all say that, yeah, they all call them their aunties.
Beloved aunts.
Yeah.
To quote a certain TV show. But
And, you know, like, I think one thing that puts a lot of people off about this movie is, you know, like, because it's dubbed, and the original actors, you know, they had a hard time trying to say their lines in English because they didn't know English. So, you know, they're trying to say them in English, so when they dub it later, it'll match. But it caused them to have this strange, like, halting way of speaking. You know, like, the way they speak, it comes off very odd. You know, especially, like, the one grandmother, the one, I guess it's in kind of the pink outfit. Like, she kind of has the, you know, "We love you all so much." So I want a remake. Do like, you? I would totally remake this movie if I had the budget and the castle and, you know, and the rabid grannies, and I actually did remake it, but nobody will probably ever see it because I did one of my movies with my family, and it was called Vicious Grannies, and it follows the plot line to a T. I totally ripped off Rabid Grannies.
And have you ever put it on YouTube?
No, because I can't find it. Oh. I don't know what happened to that one.
Oh, it's a lost. It's kind of like London After Midnight.
Yeah,
films.
It's a lost classic. I just remember that I had way too many people in it, and it's hard to find a way to kill that many people off in like 5 minutes. You know, because they have to die quickly, and my family loses interest very quickly in doing these movies.
They're very.
I love the setting. I love the setting for Rabbit Grannies. You know, the that giant castle. I think it's awesome because there's so many places to hide, or for the Rabbit Grannies to be hiding.
It kind of reminded me a bit of Burial Ground. You know, with that kind of castle, kind of mansion place, wasn't it, where they're running away from the zombies?
With less nursing.
With less nursing?
Yeah, like women nursing their babies.
Oh, yes, yes, less of that. But that was...
Because nobody tries that in Rabbit Grannies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it was the director's only film, wasn't it? So it wasn't a big hit.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about... Because I couldn't really find much background on this
at all. I've got some. Do you, Joseph?
I got a little bit.
Okay. Should we crack into background?
Yeah, I'll let you guys go.
Well.
Okay, all I have basically is apparently Emmanuel Kervin's, his preferred cut is the trauma release. Like you said, some of the gorier scenes that were shot during production ended up on the DVD as a bonus feature, but he preferred the actual cut version. Why, I do not know. The French-Canadian VHS release on the Videoville Showtime label contains an alternate cut of the film that was not approved by the director, and that's pretty much all I have. I mean, I couldn't really find much else about the film.
Mm. Well, I mean, we've already covered everything I could find, so I'd be interested to hear what you found, Nathan.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if that's true about Emmanuel Kervin preferring the cut, because I listened to his audio commentary on the DVD. Now, I don't know if I recommend anybody listening to it because he has a very thick accent. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to follow. Plus, he does spend way too much time actually talking about what's going on in the movie. And I'm like, we've already seen it. We know what's happening. You know, I wanted more background. But, okay, so the actress that played Jessica, the one that gets drunk, the fat man's wife, in the scene where, you know, she was going to be pushed up against the gate, you know, and then she had to be on the front of the car. You know, she was rigged up for her to be on the front of the car. And she was very scared because, you know, of course, the car had to go all the way up to the gate and stop right before. So the only way she'd let that happen is the director himself had to be driving the car. So in that scene, the director's the car.
Yeah.
And the director originally wanted to make a very scary horror film, but as he got into writing it and everything, he just realized that's not going to happen with this movie. That's why he threw the comedy in, which I agree with Eric. I think he should have just tried to make a scary movie, and I think it would have come across even funnier. Unintentionally, but yes, it would have. The one grandmother, the one in the pink, the one that I said had a very halting way of speaking, she was very upset because, I mean, you know, she didn't speak English, so saying these lines in English, and she kept messing them up. And, you know, like, it caused, you know, them have to do many takes with her. And at one point during the dinner table scene, she just had a breakdown, and the director had to come over and console her because she said she was ruining it for everyone. And, you know, he kind of had to get her to feeling better about her performance. You know, because she wasn't in the movie that much.
No, it's obviously not her playing. They weren't playing the when they turned rabid, were they?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, for most of it, some of them they were, but a lot of it they weren't.
One of the only cast members that actually did speak English is Radu, the butler.
Okay.
So he actually did speak English, so of course the English-speaking lines were not a problem for him. But most of the other cast did not speak it. The castle was extremely cold during filming, and I think there are times in the movie you can see their breath, and these women are having to wear these, like, summer dresses, you know, and they're freezing to death between takes, and during takes, too, I imagine. So they're having to act like it's so comfortable in there, but actually they were really cold. Most of the gore, obviously, was cut from the film for the release, and the reason I'm not sure about if that was his preferred version is, you guys know the scene where Fred gets stuck in the window?
Yeah.
Like, he complains a lot about that scene when he's watching it on the commentary, because he said that it looks like the Rabbit Grannies take one bite and he's dead. And he's like, that makes no sense. Because in the original version, they ripped him apart.
You see, I'm
in the cut version.
I'm actually watching it in the background right now, and they just showed that scene. They sit there and they gnaw on him and chew on him for ages, and they pull him apart, and he's just kind of like, you know, pounding his fists on the ground, and they're just pulling him apart, and it's just showing, like, you know, extravagant close-ups of all the, you know, the foam latex and all the blood squirting and them gnawing, and yeah.
Did either of you watch the cut version at all?
No.
Okay, well, that scene right there, all that happens is, you know where the granny's, like, cut his, like, clothes open?
Mm-hmm.
In that scene, yeah, they cut his, I guess it's his pants open. Yeah. They lean down to take a bite. It doesn't even show him taking a bite. And as soon as that happens, he's dead. Mm. And then it shows the grandma wiping their mouth. Like, it cuts out every bit of that. So the director, I mean, he's like, it makes no sense. You know, they bought him once and it killed him. Mm. So it's like, okay.
And again, it's just kind of so weird why Troma would have, after presumably releasing Toxic Avenger uncut, why they would release that, you know, sort of with so many cuts. It seems very bizarre.
Yeah, and I mean, this movie, and that's why I can't wait to watch it with the gore scenes intact, because that's the only way to watch it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, since I'm watching it in the background right now, the guy just shot one of the grannies, and she looks like Toya.
And Eric's not here to defend himself.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was gonna be the purveyor of, you know, Eric's innocence, but since he started buzzing us, I've changed my mind.
Exactly. Okay. He's ruined the show without even being on it.
Let's see. The butler, Radu, he was a very serious actor. And, you know, so, you know, they're making a more of a slapstick kind of horror movie here. And, you know, there was the scene, you know, where he slips and goes face first into the window. Hmm. Well, he came up with this idea for the director. He's like, well, you know, when you do a close-up on my face, I can blink as if I'm saying goodbye to the audience. And the director said, no, that's pointless for this movie. Mm. This is not a serious movie. And it really upset that guy, because they had a very big creative difference argument over blinking. And the director's like, I was just, no, I mean, there's no point in you blinking to say goodbye to the audience. I mean, in all honesty, his character is more of an incidental character anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like he was a main character in the film. That's really mainly what I have. I do know that I can't pronounce her name, Catherine Amory, the woman that played Helen, she went on to a pretty big career in many you know, French-speaking films. And you can actually see that on the IMDb, whereas a lot of people, this is their only film.
Hmm.
And I can't say that, oh, well, I understand why, because, I mean, it's hard to judge a dubbed film. Because I don't know how well these actors are when they're actually speaking their, you know, their language.
Well, they must have.
I mean, if somebody handed me a script and it was in French, and I don't speak French, and I was just having to say it in that way.
Hmm. Well, they must have known it was going to be a silly film, wasn't they?
Yeah, yeah. I would say they'd have to. And, you know, I didn't understand the scene where the priest. You know, I mean, he's a coward in the whole film. You know, I mean, even to the point that I love the scene where he's, you know, the mom says, oh, my daughter's still out there. And he's like, well, we'll stay right here and pray for the child. Mm. Like, yeah, great plan there. But, I mean, eventually even he leaves that room, and I don't understand the reason why. I mean, the husband leaves because he wants to prove he's not a coward. But the priest, I mean, I never understood why he eventually decided to leave the room, because as soon as he leaves, he encounters the grannies.
Yeah.
He might as well stayed in there with that chest that weighs a ton, you know, that you can't move. I mean, later, the women push it with the priest sitting on it out of the way, and they do it effortlessly. And you got to love the mom's decision of, come with me, son, I feel safer with you with me. I mean, you know, her daughter's already out there, so she's going to go take her son and put him in the line of danger, too.
Yeah. I love the scene.
If you guys noticed, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love the scene with the grannies dismembered the guy. They cut off his arm, cut off his legs, then they stabbed him in the crotch with the battle axe, picked him up, and then just tossed him like a little rag doll.
Right.
Yeah. It's an actual I mean, his torso is such a prop. It's just it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. And I also agree that it was kind of gutsy to kill off a little kid, especially in such a brutal way.
Yeah, well, she's obviously the real kid, wasn't it, in the scene, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was.
They really did kill that kid.
but they put prosthetics on her and had the killer granny behind her and stuff holding her. So I wonder if she was traumatized by that. I mean, how old was she? About seven, six or seven?
Yeah, probably. I'd say so. Around in that area, yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't believe she would want to go. Like, you know, when she runs up to that room with the toys and stuff, that she would even want to play in that room. That's the creepiest looking little kid's room. It's very dark.
Because she didn't see the granny's sort of changing, did she? Because she was having the longest dump in cinema history, I think, wasn't she?
You're right, she was. And my thing is, okay, well, she went to the bathroom. I mean, if she came back to the dining room and everybody was gone, there's still a corpse laying on that table. Hmm. That would be enough to freak a little kid out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But apparently not her. I mean, kids are very resilient, you know.
Yeah.
I love the scene at the end when the grandmothers, you know, they're back to normal and, you know, the cops are there and everything. And the one grandmother says, "I don't like your attitude, detective." And are you seriously going to criticize the detective's attitude over what he's encountered at this house? And she says something like, "I have friends in high places, heads will roll." And I'm like, that's probably not the smartest thing to say. I mean, you did just butcher several people. I mean, you were possessed, but, you know. And if you guys notice, the grandmothers are very childlike when they're demons, because there are several times they could have killed somebody and they didn't. You know, like when they're trying to trick Rachel, the final girl, into opening the door, and they do trick her and she opens the door. But when she does, they're just sitting on the ground singing and she just has time to get the door closed again. And I'm like, you know, I mean, they're very, I don't know, they're like little kids. They're kid demons.
Yeah. I like the one actually dresses up in the suit of armor.
She can't be shot. Mm.
It's coincidental she knew to do that right when he went to get his gun. I love that it took him that long to be like, "Oh yeah, I've got weapons in my car. You know, we could go use them." And what was the deal with tying an axe against the door, like as a way to keep the grannies out? Did you guys notice that?
It was like he put a
battle axe against the door or something.
Wasn't there a latch across the latch?
Oh, was it? Okay, I didn't know. I couldn't tell. I was watching it. I'm like, that's an odd way to barricade that door.
Right. Okay. Well, are we talked out on rabbit grannies? Do we think?
I think we're all.
After this, who was your favorite character in the film?
Oh,
because there's a huge cast of colorful characters.
I think probably the lesbian character. The prostitute. She's the most sympathetic. Sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I really liked her, too, and I'm glad that they had her be the heroine. You know, because I wasn't sure. That's one thing about this movie is you actually are not sure during most of the movie who's going to survive. That's one thing I liked about it. I mean, I didn't think the lesbian was actually set up to be the heroine, you know. I mean, it's not like you'd see her in the beginning and think, oh, she's going to be the final girl.
No, it would have been a shoo-in for her to be killed, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, she's a prostitute, and she's not even a member of that family. She's just showing up like, you'd almost think she'd be a side character.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yep, that's my
thank you.
As it were.
Thank you, Nathan. Well, I think before we move on to feedback, we should maybe have Eric's joke of the week.
Yes.
And Eric has given us a new jingle for it, so prepare yourself. Here is Eric's jingle and new joke of the week.
It's my joke of the week. It's so fantastic.
So I was walking along one day and I saw Joseph, Nathan and Justin going by on motorbikes, but they were all wearing designer frocks, you know, from the catwalks of Milan. It turns out that they were shooting a new movie, Rapid Trannies. Rapid trannies. Because they're on motorbikes and wearing ladies' dresses.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, Eric.
That was easily the worst one.
See.
Oh, so, Eric.
Oh, Eric. We could just go on and on like that, couldn't we? But
did we have rabies when we rode by them on motorbikes?
Apparently.
We were infected.
What did you think of Eric's new jingle?
I liked it. Better than the joke.
What about you, Nathan?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
And the joke was so bad it was good.
Well, that's what it usually is most weeks, isn't it? So thank you, Eric. And hopefully we will have the Irish Bear here next weekend for our Christmas show. But in the meantime, have we got some feedback?
We have feedback.
Okay. Well, who would like to go first?
I'll go.
I will. I'll go ahead.
Okay. It says, "Hey guys, just like a few of you, I bought the recent Halloween box set. My wife and I were determined to sit down and watch all of them. Yes, even the Rob Zombie movies. I saw both of these movies in theaters and was very disappointed, especially since I actually like The Devil's Rejects. I know that's a controversial opinion amongst you guys, but I enjoy it and think it's well made." And I, speaking for myself, I agree with him. Okay, so he says, "Now keep in mind that I hate both of Zombie's Halloween movies and think they're an insult to Carpenter's masterpiece. But I want to point out a few things that I think are decent about them. First of all, they got the mask right. All of the sequels seriously fucked up the mask, except for Part 2, which used the original mask anyway. How hard is it? It's William Shatner. Even Zombies Part 2 did a pretty cool twist on the mask. Secondly, Tyler Mane played a great slasher killer. Notice I didn't say Michael Myers. He's physically imposing, brutal, and has an intimidating look. None of these things are necessary for Michael Myers, but he would have been great in a different slasher. Thirdly, shit, I can't think of anything else. These movies really suck. Thanks for all your work on the podcast. Corey Hall in Colorado."
Oh, thank you, Corey. Well, you had fun, I'm sure, watching the other one, so that's good. I've never seen the Devil's Rejects. I think
I like the Devil's Rejects.
I thought
it's probably Zombies like one good film. I wouldn't say it's great, but it's certainly passable.
Well, I hated House of a Thousand Corpses so much that I didn't bring myself to watch the Devil's Rejects.
It's actually a totally different feel. Like, he went a totally different direction with Devil's Rejects. It's not the same style at all.
Okay. So it's worth a watch.
I'd say it's worth a watch. It's got a great soundtrack.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Right, well, thank you, Corey. Joseph, do you want to go next?
Sure. This is from John Matthews in Australia. "Good day, mate," he says. "Dear Hysteria continues, I have been a long-time listener of the show." And I'm not going to do this, actually. "I was so pleasantly surprised to hear you had a podcast after being a long-time site visitor. I used to visit the site during the early days of myself getting the net. I always found your cut and uncut comparisons interesting."
Should we have a...
yes.
Which one haven't we? Let's have a look.
"Oh, no, I wouldn't dream of letting a lady anywhere near my marbles. Now, haven't you got a strong, capable young man?"
"Especially for happy birthday to me, for example. I was so happy to discover you guys, then started a podcast with all that knowledge. The podcast makes my 1.5-hour trip to work each day more bearable. So the longer, the better." Wow, he's just full of them, isn't he?
He is.
He says, "I myself am a VHS collector of local Australian tapes. We thankfully never went through a video nasty era in Australia. Though a few films were banned, a majority of slashers were passed completely uncut, and interestingly enough, a lot of rare slashers only made it to Australian shores. Escape from the Insane Asylum, Satan's Blade, and Evil Laugh are a few favorites that graced our video stores. You will probably notice in the Nightmare USA book that a lot of posters were the Australian VHS or posters." Okay. "Also, have you guys heard of the Palace Explosive Video Label. Don't want to sound too patriotic, but it is a video label in the 80s that held a lot of slashers such as Madman and I Spit on Your Grave, and is highly desirable collector's items in the slasher market in Australia. Most importantly, they were all uncut prints. He says, I myself run a podcast down here in Australia called The Director's Sweet Cast. I'm the only horror guy on the cast. The other two are more sci-fi fans. They do like horror, however, no slashers. Mainly mainstream titles from Clive Barker, Toby Hooper, and so on. They don't delve deep into the depths. Sometimes when I let loose and discuss the obscure slasher I just picked up on Blu-ray, there is usually an awkward silence. Justin, I need to use your bell sound effect. I absolutely love how your podcast is all about having fun. Something we need to focus on, as I feel as if we are a bit on the serious side. Anyway, enough of my Aussie slasher video rambling. If I were to request an episode, it would be Intruder from 1989. It's an example of fine filmmaking and quirky slashers. It's my favorite slasher of all time. Anyway, keep up the good work, guys. Cheers from Australia. Kind regards, John Matthews.
Well, thank you, John. It's always good to hear from people down under, as it were.
Sorry? I can't believe Joseph hasn't picked Intruder yet.
Yeah.
I will eventually, or one of us will eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I was impressed how Joseph kept on slipping back into an Australian accent throughout.
Yes, me too. When he said Australia, he would always say it in an Australian accent.
Yeah.
Did I really?
Yes, you did.
I wasn't trying. It's weird.
Yeah. It was just, can you kept on slipping into it? It's almost imperceptible, but... Yeah. But yeah, no, we'll have to check out your podcast. It sounds good, and yeah, bring the fun to it and get them to review a slasher or two. You know, get them to loosen up a bit, have a beer, and just loosen up a little bit. So, I think it's you know, Intruder would be a good one to pick, and I'm sure that will come up in the not too distant future, I imagine. So, all good. Mm-hmm. I've got quite a long one here. And unfortunately, we don't have Eric here to say anything rude. But hello, the Hysteria Continues crew, and dearest Nathan. Oh. This is the Unknown Murderer, and I'm very much looking forward to a review of not only Terror at Ten Killer, but now there may be a review of Home Sweet Home. Please say it so. I eagerly anticipate your take on the film, especially the part where Body by Jake does his elbow drop on the hood of the car in order to dispatch a victim. For my next killing spree, I too will be using PCP and steroids and a car as a weapon. Surely I will kill a roller skating mime. As far as mistake, the mime's concerned, he's not a very good one, is he? He talks. He makes annoying noises constantly with an electric guitar. But that's not even the worst part. Why is a mime attempting to entertain a child with red balls in his hand? For that alone, he deserves to die. Anyways, I just can't wait for your Terror at Ten Killer review. A very trusted friend of mine tells me that when he has trouble sleeping, he puts on his VHS copy of Ten Killer, and it never fails. He falls asleep fast.
Oh, no.
It should be fun. What?
I can't believe somebody falls asleep. It's like he's saying Terror at Ten Killer is a cure for insomnia.
Well, he may have a point, though. He carries on.
It is.
He carries on.
No.
As far as the sympathetic slashers are concerned, Jason Voorhees is my favourite. The poor child was a mongoloid and deformed. Did he ever even have a chance at normal life? And after he died, his mother goes on a killing spree and is dispatched by the intended recipient of her wrath. I hate Jason Goes to Hell, but the one thing the film does for me is it features the Book of the Dead in the basement of the Voorhees house. This causes me to consider... What was Pamela Voorhees doing with that book in her house? Was she using it, practicing black magic, and why? It seems to me that she may have desired the owner to bring her boy back from the dead, but it was only the fulfillment of vengeance that he would return, and when it was her blood that was spilled, the contract was completed. Wouldn't the devil have it that way? And the spirit of vengeance, either from outside or from his own mother, resurrects dead boy Jason from the lake to carry on the curse. This would also explain why his deformities constantly change. I do think we might be reading a bit too much into that, but I do like your theorising on this. He says, I can't explain why toxic waste turned him back to a 12-year-old boy in swim trunks with a full head of hair, but I digress. Jason is still my favourite. Lastly, regarding the subtext of the funhouse, I was hardly surprised to hear that it was Eric that caught wind of this angle. Eric often catches wind. From what I can see, the main character of Amy in the funhouse is a girl who wants to lose her virginity and therefore not like a final girl at all. In fact, during the clips at the beginning of the episode, Amy proclaims vengeance upon her little brother for the sin of exposing her naked in the shower and pretends penetrating her with a knife. Why does she react so strongly as she does? Why so upset? And why does she protest so much? It could be said she overdid it a bit in the proclamation of vengeance department, but really it seems that the one simple poke of a rubber knife, the little guy hit her at the core of her being, at her place of innermost terror, and I believe it is this. Amy's greatest fear is incest. It's all getting very deep, isn't it? But anyway, I carry on. To illustrate, her kid brother has a Frankenstein poster in his room, prominently featuring the monster's face, and he drops a Frankenstein monster action figure to the floor as he watches his sister leave for the carnival with Buzz. Then he sneaks out of the house and stalks her, putting himself in danger in the process. He watches from outside. He crosses the fence, uncertain of what to do. I'm not sure myself of how well developed all of this was, and I agree with you fellas about it, that the subplot with the brother might not have been as fleshed out as it should have been and could have been eliminated. But it's interesting to me because it seems that he's trying to process the problem. However, the three carnival barkers that all look alike, one of them is the father of a monster. He tells the monster about its brother at one point, who we've seen in the jar in the freak show tent, an old woman that tells them that God is watching them and honestly isn't deformity for the sin of incest a punishment in itself. And now Amy has come face to face with a figure that wears a Frankenstein mask and is a hideously deformed product of incest. Not only do I believe that she was looking to hook up with Buzz in order to use him as a shield from her fear of incest by losing her virginity to him, but she's even denied that activity with Buzz is killed. She can't use him as a shield anymore and must face it, and she faces a creature that must be backed into the gears of a mechanism under the funhouse, dismantling it once and for all. It's tied together there, really. Look at the little brother's room at the beginning of the film. It looks like something from a horror film and not something a child would put together. Anyway, I've gone on long enough. I love the funhouse. I don't believe it's a slasher, but it's about something far more insidious. I apologise for the length of this email, but it's been a while since I've written and I love the show. Thank you for entertaining us for hours at end. Please bring back the quizzes. You, Levi Olsen, the unknown monster. So,
wow. Thank you, Levi.
Yes, that was epic. But Levi doesn't think the funhouse is a slasher, which is an interesting point, isn't it?
Wow. I would disagree.
Yes.
Well, I think he and I would have some very interesting conversations, because if you guys remember not too long ago, I bored you all with my theory on how Ralph was an assistant cook for Mrs. Voorhees.
Hmm.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Well, it must yeah, be very boring.
I went into, you know, my thoughts about it, and the response I got was, yeah, okay.
Well, it must have been a very interesting theory then.
Yeah,
it was an interesting theory.
Okay, I don't remember that, but well, it's an interesting theory about the funhouse. I mean, I think that it's. I wouldn't put anything past Toby Hooper. He was obviously more interested in the kind of perversity of the background details. So that probably could well be the case. Certainly. About the incest angle. It's a very odd film, isn't it?
I could see that a little bit, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But no, thank you, Levi, for a very long one. We always enjoy long ones. So, do you have any other feedback, or is that it?
We had one on the Hysteria Continues page. Okay. Joseph and I responded to him.
Hmm.
Let's see. It's from Nick Yemens. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that, Nick. But he says, "Hi, guys. Firstly, I'd like to echo the sentiments of everyone else that calls in or emails. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. I'm a head chef at a conference center, and when we're not in full-on kitchen mode, I'm in my prep area, filling the air with cats flushing toilets, witty banter, and the sound of Eric being bullied. My team are usually left a little confused by it all, as they're not exactly slasher fans, and I'm in seventh heaven, chuckling away with my chopper in hand. Out of my group of friends, none, I repeat, none, are into horror, let alone slasher films. This makes me incredibly envious of the four of you, but I get a much-needed release from the Hysteria Continues. I can empathize with Nathan as the way his films, Houseboat Horror springs to mind, are viewed by the rest of you is how all my favorite films are viewed by my friends. I'm usually at the center of some hopefully good-natured teasing. What are you watching? Halloween Massacre, the 13th, part 27, etc. Anyway, I started listening to the podcast in a strange order. Being a massive Friday the 13th fan, I downloaded any podcast I could find dedicated to Jason and his adventures. This led me to you. After my Friday fix, I downloaded the episodes for films that I'd seen and soon realized that with the recently seen in top threes, I didn't need to just stick with these. I'm now trying to work my way through the back catalog, but to my wife's dismay, it is taking a toll on my bank balance. Some of these hard-to-find films, if not on YouTube or with the help of Baby Jesus, are expensive. I had a copy of Teenage Wasteland way before I discovered your podcast, so it was a real facepalm moment when I realized the connection. Excellent book, Justin, but again, it got me spending. It, along with your recently seen discussions, have opened my eyes to a massive selection of cinematic gems and a few duds. The Cold Prey films, Just Before Dawn, Clown at Midnight, The Initiation, Chopping Mall, The Prowler, Pieces, Blood Tracks, The Final Terror, and Hell Night, to name a few. How these have managed to slip by me all these years, I'll never know. Before I go, two things. Firstly, I know the battle still rages about whether Leprechaun is a slasher, but do you guys have any opinions on Jack Frost, and to a lesser degree, the sequel, Jack Frost 2, Revenge of the Mutant Killer Snowman? I personally love both, but probably more as a comedy than a slasher. Secondly, can you explain the origin of Eric's alter ego, Inga? I still haven't got to that podcast yet. All the best and keep them coming, Nick.
Well, thank you, Nick. As far as Inga, I think it's self-explanatory if you listen to the Bloody Moon episode. I think you have to experience it yourself. We can't really do it justice, can we?
Just listen to Bloody Moon and it'll all come together.
Yes, it was that Eric again.
Watch Bloody Moon and it'll all come together.
Yep. What do you guys think of Jack Frost?
I haven't seen it for years. Is that the Killer Snowman? Was that one? Do we think it's a slasher? I kind of guess it. It's certainly riffing off the slasher movie, isn't it?
By our standards of what we cover on the show, then yes, it is a slasher.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of humorous for a one-time watch. Some of the puns kind of get old. But
although, did you find it offensive, the scene where Jack Frost assaults the girl with the carrot?
No.
Okay. I didn't know if that was offensive or not.
I just thought it was silly. Isn't that Shannon Elizabeth?
I don't remember.
From Scary Movie?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What's he do?
Jack Frost movies, but the second one is so unbelievably silly. They're on the beach. How is a snowman on the beach?
It sounds like right up your alley, Nathan.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's completely... Both those movies are amazing, in my opinion.
Well, I can imagine that being picked at some point, maybe another Christmas in the future.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely pick that at some point. Just so people know, I asked Eric online who was his favorite character in Rabid Grannies, and he said possibly the big-haired lesbian. So he agrees with us.
Well, there you go. So that's good.
How often do we all agree?
It's very rare, isn't it? Very rare. Next time we've got a special Christmas show, haven't we? And hopefully the family will all be back together. Eric will be back in the studio, well, on his sofa, Skype. makes it sound like we've got some kind of a amazing setup. But we're going to be doing our first visit to Silent Night, Deadly Night, aren't we?
Yeah,
which is going to be quite entertaining, I think. So that's going to make it for a really fun Christmas show. And are we doing a Christmas quiz?
I will throw one together.
Okay,
I think we should.
Yeah, so we're going to bring back the quiz not one last time, but for a one-off, our festive quiz.
Hopefully, Jingle Bells Inga will return.
Yes, I think.
Well, you're making the quiz, Joseph. Only you can make that happen.
Yeah. Inga with bells on. That's going to happen, isn't it? So, anything else to say? I think we're kind of less than rabid. We're kind of we've spent, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we've covered everything. Yeah.
Although, in all honesty, this show went on longer than I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
I mean, without, you know, Eric and without us really having like a top three or a quiz or anything.
Mm. See, we can still talk shit for a long time. So there you go.
Yeah, we can.
Joseph, what are we playing out with?
This is just the incidental credit sequence music.
Okay.
Yay.
To Rabbit Grannies. I know. You're really selling it, Joseph.
It kind of reminds me of like an instrumental version of Young and Cool and Groovy from Houseboy Horror without the lyrics.
Oh, the horror.
The music sounds like it anyway. Mm. I was going to play out with a Toya song just since Eric was not here, but that's even worse.
Yeah, no, we can't do that. So, well, thank you very much for listening to The Hysteria Continues, and next time it will be the return of Inga.
Yay.
Yay. And so one last...
You whore!
He will be back. See you next time, and thanks for listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.